Okay, we are in Genesis chapter 37. So again, last week we looked at chapter 36, which is kind of like, it's kind of a break. You're between two different stories, okay? So in chapter 35, we're basically coming to it's the last chapter that's really focused on the life of Jacob himself. And then in chapter 37, we see in verse 2, it says, these are the generations of Jacob. So it's kind of refocusing the story to focus on his children. So chapter 36 is just kind of in the middle to talk about the generations of Esau. We looked at that last time, the different lists of names that are in here. You've got Esau's wives, you've got his sons, you've got dukes that came of his sons, the kings that were in the land. And I know we kind of stopped a little short talking about this last time, but there's one thing that I think is pretty interesting about all this stuff that it says about Esau. Remember, when these two boys were born, going back to Genesis 25, the Lord said to their mother, Rebekah, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. Now we know who's the elder and who's the younger. That's pretty obvious, because one came out first, even though they're both twins. What's less obvious is that when he says the one people shall be stronger than the other people. Well, which one? Which one's going to be stronger? And we talked about this before. Well, it kind of depends on what strength you're looking at. If you're looking at after the flesh, obviously Esau's the stronger one. He's got this great big army. He's this mighty hunter that goes out and, you know, Esau's like a warlord. He goes out, he conquers this land, Mount Seir, and that becomes his home. But you also read later on that Jacob has a wrestling match with God, and guess what? He prevails. He wins. And it doesn't mean that God loses. God had a purpose in it, and God blessed him through it. But Jacob had a strength that was spiritual. It came from humility. It came from fear of God. It came from being able to go before God and pour it all out and shed tears and cry to God the same way that Jesus did. Amen. So, but anyway, when you read Genesis chapter 36, you read about Esau's kingdom, and it just starts, wow, it just starts growing, and you got all these dukes, and you got all these kings, and it even makes a note in verse 31 and say, these are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom before there reigned any king over the children of Israel. It kind of looks like Edom has this big head start. Wow, his nation is really going. He's got all these kings. They've got this kingdom going. And Jacob, well, he's still wandering around in sheepskins and goatskins. He doesn't really have a home yet. He's staying here, staying there. Kind of looks like Esau is kind of further ahead, right? But God's working in Jacob's life in a very special way. Amen. And as we continue on, we're going to see that God is still working even when it looks like things are going pretty bad. That's especially true in the life of Joseph. So chapter 37, we get back to the narrative, we get back to the story, and we'll just start there in verse 1. And it says, and Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. And his brethren said to him, Shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream and told it his brethren and said, Behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. And his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said unto Joseph, Do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, Here am I. And he said to him, Go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. So we're going to stop there. That might be as far as we get today. But let's go back and talk about it. So verse one. Okay. So the timeline is kind of interesting here. And it takes a lot of work to put the different pieces together. There's little clues given throughout the book of Genesis that help us to put this together. And that's this handout that I gave you. Put some notes on there about where those different clues are and how they line up. So if you go back to chapter 35, let's talk about this. So we know that Jacob had moved his family to Shechem and had bought some land there in chapter 33. And then in chapter 34, we know what happened with his sons. They deceived this man, Shechem, who the land was named after. And they ended up killing him. They killed his father. They killed the whole city. It was a really awful story. But Jacob ends up living in that land, Shechem. Okay? Then chapter 35... God says to Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel. And he goes to Bethel, and then he starts to journey back toward his father, who lives in Hebron. He gets there at the end of the chapter. And then at the end of the chapter, after he gets to Hebron, it says, Isaac gave up the ghost and died, was gathered unto his people, being old and full of days. He was 104 years old. That's 180, okay? But all this that happened in chapter 35 doesn't necessarily happen before chapter 37. That's why it's helpful to look at a chart like this, okay? So actually, when Joseph is 17 years old, if you look at the right side of the chart where it says Joseph, it's like right in the middle of the page. And then you go down to where he's 17. It says, Joseph dreams, sold into Egypt. You'll notice that's actually, it's about 12 years before Isaac dies. Okay? So here's where there's a little bit of a gap in chapter 35. So he's journeying from Bethel in verse 16, and that's where Rachel dies. That's where Benjamin is born. And then He continues journeying. He comes to Hebron, and then there's some space there between the time he gets to Hebron and meets with Isaac and then the time that Isaac actually dies. There's some years in there. Okay? When we get to chapter 37, we just read that Jacob sends Joseph out of the vale of Hebron to go to Shechem. So at this point, they've already gone to Hebron. They've already met with Isaac, which means they've already finished this journey. Isaac is still alive. Okay, we know that by Joseph's age and how this lines up. But they're in Hebron with Isaac, and Rachel died on the journey there, and Benjamin is already born. And that kind of helps us with a little bit of a mystery with these dreams, actually. And why, this, in all this communication, Joseph tells it to his father, he tells it to his brethren. It doesn't say he told his mother. Why not? She's not there anymore. She's dead at this point. Okay? But we'll talk about that when we get to it in this passage. Okay, so verse 1, and Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. Again, this lines up with chapter 35, verse 27. And Jacob came unto Isaac his father, unto Mamre, unto the city of Arba, which is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac sojourned. Okay, so that is the land wherein his father was a stranger. And Jacob is dwelling there. He's going to be there for a little while. As a matter of fact, I think he's going to be in the same place until he ends up moving to Egypt later on. Verse 2, these are the generations of Jacob. We talked about this phrase several times already. It appears throughout the book of Genesis. Whenever the narration says, these are the generations of so-and-so, it's like refocusing the story to focus on someone else. It's like the camera moves from focusing on this to focusing on that. And it's just like it says, these are the generations of Jacob. What it's saying is, this is the story of Jacob's children. Let's talk about Joseph now, okay? He's one of the children. He's the main one that it's going to follow right now. So, it says, these are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. Notably, these are his half-brothers. Okay, because Joseph was the firstborn son of Rachel. And it says, and Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Uh-oh. Joseph was a little bit of a tattletale, it looks like. So these brothers, they're doing something that's not good or saying something that's not good. We don't really have any details about it. But Joseph brought unto his father the report of whatever evil they were doing. So I'm sure they didn't appreciate that very much, although his father probably appreciated it. In one thing that's interesting about this passage is Joseph is really a standout character, okay? We read about Abraham and how he messed up. We read about Isaac and how he messed up. We read about Jacob and all the places where he messed up. When we get to Joseph, he's not really described as someone who messes up. Now, this is in his youth. He might be a little, tactless, I guess. Maybe not showing a lot of discretion in the way that he shared these dreams with his brothers. But we really don't read about any evil that he did. Okay? But he brought unto his father their evil report. Okay, verse 3. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. So you read this, and I don't know what it's like to be a dad. Most of the men in this church know what it's like to be a dad. You have children. Some of you have many children. But it says Israel loved Joseph more than all his children. Well, what exactly does that mean? Does it mean he cared more about Joseph or that he didn't care about his other children? No, it doesn't mean that. But this is Jacob here. Now, Jacob's own father, Isaac, also had a favorite son. And guess what? It wasn't him. Isaac had two sons. Go back to Genesis 25. Isaac had two sons. 25:27, it says, the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Notice, it doesn't really say that Isaac loved only Esau or that Rebekah loved only Jacob, but it's making a point. Each of these parents, they both had their favorite son. There was something about them that it calls out. It's special. It's like Isaac says, I love this guy. Why? He brings me the savory meat that I love. And Rebekah, it says, loved Jacob. So Isaac has a favorite here. Jacob also has a favorite. And it says because he was the son of his old age. I think that's, it doesn't mean he cared about one son more than the other. I think it's just kind of a preference, like, I like what this son does. I have a special relationship with him that I don't have with the other kids. You say, well, that's natural. Maybe you say, oh, that's not natural. That's wrong. That's favoritism. You shouldn't do that. Again, most of y'all are parents. You probably understand that better than I do. But that's what it says. Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. This is something kind of interesting that I uncovered as I was doing the study, because I always wondered, like, well, how old was Jacob when he actually went to Padan Aram and he spent 20 years there? He served 14 years for his two wives and then another 6 years for his cattle. So how old was he when he came to Padan Aram? You think, okay, well, Esau was 40 years old when he married his two Hittite wives. So you think, okay, well, when did Jacob come then? Probably he was around 40 years old, right? No, actually, that was about 37 years afterward. After Esau was married, that Jacob comes to Padan Aram. He was about 77 years old. And we know that because he spent 14 years there. And over the second week, the second set of 7 years, that's when he had all his children, including Joseph, not Benjamin. Benjamin was born later. But anyway, Joseph, as it turns out, was born when Jacob was about 91 years old. So he's called the son of his old age. Now, frankly, Jacob was pretty old when all of his sons were born. But I think Jacob had like all of his sons in a very short time period, within like 7 years, except for Benjamin, who came later. So out of that group, Joseph was the baby. He was the son of his old age, and I think Jacob just got really attached to him. And by this time, like I said, I believe Benjamin is also born, but still, I don't know. He's got this special relationship with Joseph. And it says at the end of verse 3, he made him a coat of many colors. And I know there's people that make a great big deal about this coat of many colors. There's like a movie or a play or something called Joseph's Technicolor Dreamcoat, something like that. There's really not a lot of detail about the coat of many colors in the story. This is what we know about it. One, it was identifiable. It was very unique. When his father saw it, he knew 100%, that's my son's coat. Okay? There's one other verse in the Bible that really, I kind of saw some similarity there. That's 2 Samuel 13. So let's turn there. 2 Samuel chapter 13 and verse 18. I'm not really going to get into too much of the context of what happened here, but we'll just read this verse. 2 Samuel 13, 18. It says, "And she had a garment of diverse colors upon her, for with such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins appareled." So this is one of David's daughters. And she also had a garment of diverse colors. It was a coat of many colors, you could say. But it was something that it was uncommon. It was something that really stood out. It was something of great value, of great worth. David was a king. He could afford to do this kind of stuff for his daughters. Jacob was a very wealthy man. I don't think this was a garment like, I've got a black goat and a white goat and a brown goat, and I'm just mixing all these goat hides together. I think this was something a little richer, like I'm getting dyes from this trader and that trader, and I'm really building a beautiful coat here. It was something very special. So verse 4, it says, "When his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him." And what is that? That's envy. That's envy. They couldn't stand that their father loved him more than them. Now, was there some justification to that? Maybe not to hate him like they hated him, because they hated him so much that we'll see later on in this chapter they wanted to kill him. But when you have a favorite, this kind of happens, especially when he's your dad too. Now, that's one of the problems when you got all these different wives and you got all these different children, and then you have a favorite. The other kids are like, well, why does he get to be the favorite? Why not me? Why not us? What makes him so special? So it's kind of, I think there's, we've read certain stories that were like, well, okay, you got this guy and he's going against this guy. Well, who's the good guy and who's the bad guy? Like Genesis 14, you got these kings against these kings. Who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? I don't think it's always that simple. Okay, there's always different sides and there's different things going on. So I think some of their feeling is kind of justified, just not to the extreme that they took it to. I'm not trying to justify his brethren here, justify their feelings, but you can kind of understand that their father had a favorite and it wasn't them, and they were kind of upset about that. Verse 5. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. So, you know, I'll just read through this dream again. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose, and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood round about, and made obeisance to my sheaf. Now you read through the Bible, and you read about different men having different dreams. You read about some of Daniel's dreams, or Nebuchadnezzar's dreams, Pharaoh's dreams, these dreams that Joseph has. And you realize not everybody can interpret dreams, okay? It takes somebody with the Spirit of God and understanding or direct revelation from God to be able to interpret these things. But when Joseph said this dream and tells it to his brethren, I think his brethren are kind of, they're kind of taking a hint from this. Okay, your sheaf stood up and all ours bowed down to it, like, who do you think you are? That word obeisance, it basically just means a physical, like a physical show of submission. It could mean like bowing down. That's probably what it means here. It could mean like a curtsy or any kind of physical showing of submission. Like you're deferring to somebody that's special, in a special position. So verse 8, his brethren said to him, shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? So that meaning was coming in loud and clear. Like, okay, they're not like, oh, what are you had dreams about sheaves and they're bowing down? Whoa, that's weird. No, they took the meaning. And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. Verse 9, and he dreamed yet another dream and told it his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And I bet they're like, oh boy, we can't wait to hear what this one is. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. Whoa, okay. Well, this is a guy who has 11 brothers. So, okay, maybe the brothers are the stars, and who are the sun and the moon? I don't know, maybe his parents? Now, again, if he has 11 brothers at this time, if Benjamin is already born, which I think he is, then his mother actually is already dead. But Jacob, verse 10, he told it to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? So his own father is kind of interpreting the dream the same way and saying, well, it's pretty obvious, son. You got 11 brothers, a sun and the moon. Well, those would be your parents. Are we all really going to bow down? Your mother's not even here anymore. It's kind of like, what are you dreaming? This is crazy. And it says his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. So, I don't know, your son has a dream like this, and you think, okay, well, your son's dream is basically saying that his own father is going to bow down to him, along with his mother and all his children, all his brothers. And you know, I mean, if you're a good parent, a good father, you want your children to have some humility, right? But you understand, humility is key to having a relationship with God. It's key to getting along well with other people. You want your kids to have humility. So you hear him dreaming this kind of dream, and you're like, well, I don't know what to think about this. Now, there's a couple of possibilities. One, he's just making this up. He's just making it up, right? I mean, you have a couple of dreams like this, and then you, oh, I had these dreams, guys. Y'all are supposed to bow down to me. Okay, you're trying to make yourself out to be some kind of a big shot, Joseph. But his father thought, hey, you know what? There might be something to this. This might be God speaking to him. And so he observed it. He considered it. He pondered it. Okay. So verse 12, it says, and his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. So as I understand, this is actually quite a ways off from where Hebron is. Shechem is where they were coming from. So they came from Shechem, they went to Bethel, and then they continued on from Bethel to Hebron. So this is a journey here. Verse 13, Israel said unto Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, here am I. And he said to him, go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. So he sends Joseph to his brethren to check on them and, you know, see whether it be well with them. It says earlier that Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. So I think Jacob is kind of counting on Joseph to speak the truth. Okay, if it's good, let me know. If it's bad, well, I know you're going to tell me. But I think that's as far as we're going to get today. But this is a really interesting story when you consider all the different parallels. There's a lot of, and we're going to get a lot deeper than this as we get further into the story of Joseph. But just consider like some of the things that we already see about Joseph as we're reading this. So first, it says in verse 2, he was feeding the flock. What does that make him? A shepherd, right? Okay. Israel loved Joseph more than all his children. You kind of remember somebody saying, this is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. You can see that Jacob trusted Joseph to be able to send him on errands and to communicate the truth to him. He was sent by his father to his brethren. And he also brought unto his father their evil report. It's almost like he was exposing their sin. He had on a coat of many colors. This was a unique garment. And later on in this chapter, we're gonna understand that it would also become a vesture dipped in blood. One thing about these dreams that I didn't really speak about yet, but Joseph actually wasn't making them up. These weren't Joseph's delusions of his own grandeur. Now, he might have gotten that impression when he had these dreams. Like, oh, this is about me. Hey, all my brethren and my father and my mother are all bowing down to me. Like, I'm sure he probably understood that. That was pretty obvious to the rest of his family. But he didn't make this stuff up. These dreams were coming from God. Go to Genesis chapter 41. We're kind of skipping ahead in the story a little bit, but I just want to read some of the verses that Joseph says later about the dream that Pharaoh had. Genesis chapter 41, look at verse 16. Pharaoh asked if he can interpret the dream, and Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace." What is he saying? God's talking to you, Pharaoh. You had these dreams. God is speaking to you. Verse 25. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, "The dream of Pharaoh is one. God hath showed Pharaoh what he is about to do." Verse 32. "And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice. It is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass." So this is what is going on in Genesis chapter 37. God is speaking to Joseph in these dreams and showing him what he is about to bring to pass. Now the whole story isn't told in those dreams. Joseph doesn't know that he's about to, almost get murdered by his brothers and then be sold into slavery. And he doesn't know all the things that are going to have to happen to him in order for this dream to be fulfilled. Is Joseph a very spiritual man at this point? I don't know. Probably not, I would guess. I really don't know. He's 17 years old, and I'm not saying, you know, somebody at 17 years old can't have a walk with God and be close to God, but that's not really brought up in this part. We don't really see anything about Joseph's walk with God until later, when he's in distress, when he's in slavery in Egypt. Then we start to see, oh, God actually is with him. Maybe Joseph called out to him later on. I don't know. But here's the thing. God had a purpose in what was going on here. Whether Joseph was just kind of, being a little indiscreet, I guess, in what he was saying to his family. Maybe, oh, hey, guess what, guys? You're all going to bow down to me. Maybe that's not really the right way to say it to your family. But here's the thing. God had a purpose in it. And in Joseph saying that to his family, it was going to drive them to envy so that they would do the things that would lead to this dream being fulfilled, which was all part of God's plan. And there's a lot more about that we're going to look at later on. But again, he was speaking the word of God. And guess what? His brothers hated him for it, and they rejected him. He was envied and hated by his brethren, and they received him not. And then finally, again, his rejection was according to God's plan to save the very people that rejected him. All those different things that I just mentioned, you should all, hey, that kind of reminds me of someone else. Someone that God sent to his brethren, and he spoke the word of God, but they rejected him, right, and they wanted to put him to death. But it was all part of God's plan to save those very people. So that's where we're gonna end up for today. I hope you got a blessing out of that and continue to think about this. And thanks for being in Sunday school.